up, everybody? Welcome to this week's edition of the Porch of AllQuest Baseball Podcast, presented by our great friends, great people over there. It's Bobby King and Bobby LLP. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. T&T Lawyers, 423-245-4185 for a free consultation. It's Bobby King and Bobby LLP.com. Big thank you to them. As always, they can help you. If you have a need, surely give them a call. Again, a free consultation. Great weekend. Great opening week, I should say, for Tennessee baseball. I mean, a little ho-hum, 75-6. Tennessee outscoring its opponents. A three-game sweep of Hofstra in run-rule fashion. A midweek contest where the 29 runs tied for the most in the Tony Vitello era here at Tennessee. If you go way back to February, I had it in the four takes the other night. February 29th, I want to say, or maybe a little bit earlier than that, 2022 against Iona. 29 runs. Woo! A whole lot of runs. So we've seen a lot of Tennessee players play. We've seen a lot of reserve players play. We've seen a lot of freshmen play. We've seen a ton of arms on the mound. We'll talk about the pitching here in a moment. Of course, Tennessee's bullpen has been really, really good so far. Two earned runs by the bullpen thus far in the season in four games and 14 innings pitched. So that's looked good. But Tennessee's 4-0. And continuing this non-conference slate here, with Samford this weekend, and then, of course, the big one in Houston coming up the following weekend. So looking forward to that. All about working out, working through some kinks and trying to find out who fits where and all that and more. So we're going to kind of talk about that here on today's show. Charlie Taylor is going to make his debut here on the porch coming up in about 15 or 20 minutes. Had Xander last week, Charlie this week. We'll have Xander again next week. And I'm interested to hear some insights from Charlie Taylor, what he picked up on opening weekend, and his thoughts on Marcus Phillips and some of these other pitchers on the Tennessee roster. So all that and more, and a Samford preview coming up here as the show goes on. This is The Porch every Thursday during baseball season. And my biggest, you know, couple big takeaways for, you know, so far through four games this year from my point of view. I mean, shocker, right? I mean, this Tennessee team can absolutely rake. This Tennessee team can hit. It's been a whole lot of fun to watch. Every player in the quote-unquote starting lineup, or at least what Stat Crew views as the starting lineup, there's been guys that have been in and out. Everybody's hitting over 300. Levi Clark, Jay Abernathy, Manny Marin, Ariel Antigua, Stone Lawless, Chris Newstrom, even those players who have started games this year, is hitting over 300. So, and again, four games, horrible pitching. Hofstra was terrible. UNC Asheville was not good. I recognize all that, but this team is just smashing the baseball, hitting 415 in four games as a squad, already 12 home runs, already three grand slams. Hunter Ensley in game two, Reese Chapman in game three, and Dalton Bargo on Tuesday night. And of course, that was a part of a two-homer inning. He joins Luke Lipsius and Sonny Cortez and I forgot the other name, Edmondson, who have done that, his former Tennessee brethrens before him. So that was really, really cool to see. So, again, this Tennessee team can absolutely smash the baseball. And small sample size, but that was obviously notable. And we kind of knew that coming into the season. But it's the versatility. I mean, we saw Andrew Fisher at first base, at third base. We've seen Dalton Bargo in left field, at catcher, at first base. We've seen Ariel Antigua play shortstop and second base. We've seen Dean Curley play second short and third. Gavin Keelan plays short and second, as we knew he would. I love the versatility of this team, and I think that is a true strength for this ball club. Pitching, and again, I kind of talked about this in the 3-2-1. You can't take much, you know, so far, small sample size, and you know, given what Hofstra was and what UNC Asheville was. But, I mean, Liam Dewell was awesome, right? I mean, he's a bona fide weekend starter, bona fide Friday night guy right now. Faced the minimum through five, 58 pitches through five, one hit. No runs, 11 strikeouts, no walks. He was awesome. I mean, it was really, really cool to see him make his Tennessee debut there on opening night, and he was definitely as advertised. I thought Marcus Phillips had some moments the other day. Worked out of his defense, let him down a couple of times in that start, but worked out of some jams and had four innings, and I thought he looked good, continuing his good work through the preseason into his first outing. Nate Snead wasn't his best day at the office, but he too, you know, faced some adversity, worked through some things. Did give up a run. Tony Vitello said, as far as this weekend's concerned with Samford, that they're going to follow the same script with Liam Dewell on Friday night, Marcus Phillips on Saturday, and then TBD on Sunday. So we'll see if Nate Snead is the guy that will get the start again. I think Tegan Coons, who was slated to pitch, not start, but was slated to pitch last weekend, probably Friday nights from what I was told, but he was, you know, running a fever, you know, was sick, and so he's a little bit under the weather. I asked Tony Vitello on Tuesday night if they had plans, if he was going to be available this weekend. And he told me that he hopes to be available. They're going to throw him a bullpen either Wednesday or Thursday with hopes of having him available to help on Sunday, but doesn't know if he will for sure. So I would be surprised at this point, just given he's been sick, if Tegan Coons was starting that game. But maybe we'll see him make his Tennessee debut on Sunday. We're going to see him start a game at some point, and then, you know, from there we'll see what happens. Dylan Loy, you know, Tony Vitello gave an update on him. I think it was Sunday. He was another one of those guys that was, at least somebody told me that he was sick. I mean, here in East Tennessee, everybody's sick right now, and that's, you know, the Tennessee baseball team is not immune to that. You know, when they came back to campus in January, a couple of those guys got sick, and, you know, when you have a locker room full of guys, you know, somebody gets sick, it kind of gets passed around. I think Dylan Loy might have been one of those guys. It kind of put him back a week or two, so, I mean, he's going to be fine, but we'll see if he's available to pitch this weekend. I would assume not right now, but you know, we'll see. I'll ask about that as the week progresses, certainly heading into the weekend. But I thought the pitching looked good. Again, two earned runs by the bullpen and 14 innings so far in four games. Not bad. Of course, we've seen a lot of different guys throw. I was impressed with Nick Abraham. I was impressed with Tanner Franklin. Man, I thought he looked really, really good. Ryan Combs, you know, so on and so forth. Let's see here. Braden Krenzel, I think, is going to be good. I think Luke Payne's going to have a role for this team this year. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of these pitchers have looked good in the limited amount of work so far. So I'm intrigued to see a lot of those guys throw even more. I'm excited to see maybe some debuts of Aiden Hayes, and there's a couple other ones that haven't thrown just yet outside of the ones who have been injured. So looking forward to seeing, you know, what Tate Strickland, another one, looking forward to seeing what those guys have to offer. But my biggest takeaway, and I wrote about this in the 3-2-1, they've been the freshmen, right? You know, all of us, myself, my colleagues at other publications wrote, you know, over the weekend at some point, you know, why isn't Jay Abernathy starting? What did Tony Vitello say about not starting Jay Abernathy? What did Tony Vitello say about how he envisions Jay Abernathy's role being? And I thought it was kind of funny. It was on Sunday, you know, I asked about Jay Abernathy, and then there was a follow-up asked by somebody, you know, why didn't he start? And Tony just kind of said, well, I think he kind of admitted to it. He's like, I think I was just sitting up there, had too much time in the office, and I think I was tinkering too much. And I get what he was saying. He was saying he likes to, you know, bring him in mid-contest for someone who got on base and allow him to immediately impact the game by stealing and then stay in there because he can play center field, left field, second base, eventually maybe shortstop. I get that. But, I mean, and who's to say if he's going to be, you know, coming into the season, he would certainly look like to be the projecting starting left fielder, no doubt. Who's to say if, like, you know, he's not eventually going to be that. But I just start him. You know, and that's what Tennessee did on Tuesday. And, yes, it was UNC Asheville. But, I mean, his stat line on Tuesday was, like, 1-for-2 or something, 4 walks, 4 stolen bases, 5, was it 5 runs scored? It was something incredible like that. He immediately got on base, stole second. Immediately got on base, stole second, third. Came around and, you know, scored on a throwing error by the catcher. Jay Abernathy is going to impact the game. So whether he starts and is in left field or comes in as a defensive replacement at second or whatever, he's going to impact the game, and he's fun to watch. And I know a lot of people are saying we got our own Billy Hamilton or Enrique Bradfield Jr. or whatever. I don't know. I mean, he's going to be Jay Abernathy, but certainly he's got versatility with the glove. He's got speed on the base pass, and he's exciting to watch. Chris Neutrum, I was surprised that he had 2 starts in left field on opening weekend. Now, he didn't start on Sunday, or on Tuesday, excuse me. Jay Abernathy got his first start in left field. And it's not like he came out of nowhere, because we had written about it, and the notes that I, you know, dropped on the board from the pizza series and from, you know, scrimmages leading into the pizza series and all that. I mean, Chris Neutrum's a name that just continued to pop up. He continued to hit, given opportunities, focusing more on the outfield since coming back from fall, where in the fall he played a little, I mean, he played outfield too, but played some second, played some first, and all that. He's been really focusing on the outfield, and he just continued to hit, and I think he earned the opportunity to get some regular playing time, obviously, opening weekend. And, you know, lo and behold, what did he do? He had a 3-run double in one of those games. I think it was Saturday. Looked really, really good. So I'm intrigued to see what he looks like moving forward. And he had a bases loaded walk the other night, but you and I did as well against UNC Asheville in that 29-4 defeat of the Bulldogs. So I think he's looked good. Manny Marin didn't play in Tuesday's game. I think he, you know, a bit banged up a little bit. I don't think it's anything to worry about. We should probably see him back in the fold this weekend. But he had the first 2 starts at third base, you know, opening day and on Saturday, and then came in as a defensive replacement and had a hit, I believe, in the sixth inning of Sunday's game. But yeah, he started two games immediately at third base over with Fisher at first base over Ariel Antigua or over Dalton Bargo or whoever else is kind of in the fold there. Manny Marin is good with the glove, really good with the stick in his hands, and I think he's going to be good. And then Levi Clark, I mean, he's shown tremendous power to begin the season and, designated hitter, catching a little bit. He can play first and corner outfield. Levi Clark, I think, is going to be really, really good. Man, he just looks good in the box, and he's hit for power. And the other night, he missed clearing the bases by a couple inches on the drive to left field. Man, he looked really, really good. So I've been super excited about seeing those four. Again, I liked a lot of what I saw from Nick Abraham. I think Braden Krenzel's coming along. We'll see what Tate Strickland, Aiden Hayes look like. But man, and of course Tegan Coons. But man, those freshmen, that core four, if you will, of Abernathy, Marin, Newstrom, and Clark, man, they're going to be good. And you want that. Like Dalton Bargo even talked about this on Tuesday. You know, somebody asked, is it hard not to press at the plate when you know that there's somebody just waiting to take your bat away, right? And, you know, Dalton Bargo gave a great answer. He said, sometimes, sure, that's human nature, but at the end of the day, we all know the ball players we are. We all know everybody's going to be contributing at different spots throughout the season, and we just want to go win. I thought it was a great answer. But, you know, these guys, Abernathy, Marin, Newstrom, Clark, even Stone Lawless on the bench there, first base DH catcher, they just wanted bats. And you know, they're trying to get in the game and leave a lasting effect. And that's easy to do against Hofstra and, of course, UNC Asheville. This weekend coming up is going to be a bit of a more challenge, and I'll dive into Sanford here in a moment. But so far, great opening week. Dalton Bargo, man, and again, I kind of wrote about this, and there's been some conversation on the board and all that. I mean, nobody like his weekend, he was, you know, got the opening day start in left field, did not start games 2 and 3. He was a combined 0 for 5, 2 strikeouts, and an error in the field over opening weekend. And then, of course, you had guys like Marin and Abernathy and Newstrom and Clark just hitting. And so a lot of people were already kind of pushing Dalton Bargo aside. And I even, too, I wrote about it, like, certainly no, like, his season's not over. Nobody's giving up on him. He's certainly going to get more opportunities. But, like, he needs to have a day. And, gosh, did he have a day on Tuesday, man? Man, what did he have a day. Two home runs there in the second inning, including a grand slam. Drove in 5, scored 4 runs. Phenomenal day at the office. And Dalton Bargo is just a baseball player. He's one of those guys that you want on your team. Like, I asked him, I was joking around with him, like, how many gloves are in your bag, right? You know, first base, catcher, outfield. That's a ball player. You know, those are old school ball players that you just come to the park and the manager tells you where to go and you go. You know, that's Dalton Bargo. And so there's a lot of value there. And that's why I think that he is one of those X factors for Tennessee moving forward. I mean, he logged outfield innings in Omaha last year, like in the College World Series finals. Like, the dude can play. And so, you know, some of that talk I think was a bit premature, but it gets back to this point right here. If you are not hitting, you are not playing because there's somebody that is deserving to be in that lineup. You only get 8 spots on the field, 9 spots you count the pitcher. You only get 8 spots defensively on the field. And Tennessee's got like 12 guys that can play. So if you're not contributing, if you're not hitting for an average or whatever, if you're slumping, you need to work out of that slump some. Here in the early season, they're going to put somebody else in there. And then, of course, all that will settle out and fiddle as you kind of go throughout the season on into SEC play when you focus on your starting lineup. But I thought Dalton Bargo had a fantastic response. You know, Reese Chapman, who started the season off really, really well, he had that grand slam on Saturday or Sunday, I believe. Already, 4 hits in 4 games, you know, one of those being a grand slam, driven in 7 runs. Dean Curley, Hunter Ensley, Reese Chapman have all driven in 7 runs already. Dean Curley's already homered 3 times. Yeah, that's some good baseball. But thought Reese Chapman has started the season off really, really well, too. So there's just so many guys, and that's been a huge takeaway, the versatility, the depth. And I'm intrigued to see kind of what those guys look like. It's better competition this weekend. And then, of course, next weekend, you know, it's going to get real down there in Houston. So I'm looking forward to that. All right. So enough about me. Let's get into our conversation with Charlie Taylor, former Tennessee catcher, longtime clubhouse guy. It's been a whole lot to this program. I reached out to him a couple months ago whenever I was getting ready for baseball season and kind of planning out how I wanted to go coverage-wise. And I said, hey, would you have any interest in, you know, joining the show once every 2 weeks, kind of talking, giving your perspective on what you've seen and all that? And kind of adding to the conversation on things that I can't, you know, because I don't have the mask on and, you know, I'm not in that dugout. And he'd be like, man, I'd love to. I don't know how well I'll do at it, but I'd love to. And I'm like, well, I think you're going to do just fine. So we're going to welcome on Charlie Taylor to the show. Really excited to talk with him. But first, let's get a word from our friends, our proud presenting sponsors. That is Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you, TN Trial Lawyers. Great guys, Matthew A. Spivey, J. Matt King, Richard A. Spivey. They specialize in criminal defense, family law, personal injury, DUI, assault, divorce, custody, alimony, parental rights, personal injuries such as car wrecks, and more. 80 years of combined experience, over 80 years. Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout state and federal courts of Northeast Tennessee. The firm has a vast amount of trial experience. This practice has been in place for 43 years. This specific partnership formed in 2012, while also having partners who were energized and ready for today's modern legal demands. They practice primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, as well as Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas. The firm has multiple awards and attorneys who have been rated by super lawyers in Mid-South with real trial experience. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need help with a divorce, help with custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP, they're here to help you. Go see them in person at 142 Cherokee Street, Kingsport, Tennessee, or just pick up the phone, dial this number, and you're going to get a free consultation. That's 423-245-4185. You can always check them out online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. Again, Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem? Let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers. Charlie Taylor, what's going on, man? How's life treating you?
It's going well. Thank you for having me on, Eric. I'm excited to talk some Vols baseball here.
How weird is it to be doing these type of interviews, not a player anymore, from the outside looking in, talking about what you saw and all that? I know this is probably one of the first ones you've done kind of on this side of it, early on into retirement, we'll call it, but it's got to be a weird feeling not being out there, right?
It's weird. I think the hardest part is not, you know, being in the locker room or being in the dugout and just kicking it with your teammates, you know, whatever dumb thing somebody does that day that everybody laughs about. You miss little stuff like that, you know, and it's almost more fun as a fan to sit back and watch the game and, you know, go through different scenarios about what you might have done differently there or how that related to something that happened in your playing career. So,
yeah, I would say it's probably a lot less stressful, but they haven't really gotten into games that matter yet. So you might not know if it's less stressful or not, but I'm sure that there's a lot less things going on when you're sitting back there listening to John Wilkerson and watching the game for sure. Big takeaways from the weekend. I mean, it was Hofstra, 3-run rule games, a lot of runs, not a lot of pitching or defense for Hofstra, but still you got to see a lot of players and, you know, three lopsided Tennessee wins. What were some of your biggest takeaways from the weekend?
I think that it's what you just said right there. You saw a lot of guys and in particular, a lot of young guys. I think depth is going to be the name of the game this year for Tennessee baseball, maybe more than any other year. It's a talented group. You know, you don't have the established superstars coming back in Christian Moore or Blake Burke, where, you know, 70 games out of the year, however many they end up playing, those guys are going to be at first base and second base every game. There might be one spot on the field like that, maybe, you know, Inslee out in center field, but and there's going to be bats that'll be in the lineup every game. But, you know, to a certain extent, there's going to be a lot of shuffling going on, a lot of jockeying for position. And it's going to be fun to watch those guys compete, not only against their opponent, but internally as well.
We're going to get back to what you saw over the weekend, but you kind of talk about depth. And that brings me to, you know, a comment made by, I think it was Hunter Inslee on Saturday. We were asking him after the game. He had a grand slam in that series. And we ask him about the freshman class, you know, with Jay Abernathy, Chris Newstrom, Andy Marin, you know, Levi Clark, all those guys. And I think somebody was like, hey, where would you rank this freshman class of these? Because, I mean, there's been some really good freshman classes the last couple of years. Asking Inslee, kind of where would you rank them? And he said, oh, they're up there. Probably not as high as, you know, Simo and Burke and Tears and Beam and Burns and all like that class. But this class is up there. I mean, that when you sit back there and think about that class a couple of years ago with KT and Burke and Simo and all. I mean, so much talent. It's asinine to sit here and think about these classes that Tony Vitello, Josh Elander, and his staff have brought to campus. And I think this one's going to be another one of those because I think a lot of dudes can play.
Yeah, and it's not just about the guys that come in and light it up right away. There's a guy you mentioned, KT, who you know, doesn't get the opportunities he wants his first year. Second year gets a little bit of action, but maybe doesn't perform like he does. But he just sticks with it and develops and develops and then turns into a star last year. You know, you've got guys like Reese Chapman who are getting better every day from the class after him. So who's going to be that? Those few guys from this current class too, who maybe we're not talking about right now, but they're just going to put their head down and get better every day. But I think it goes to show you that even in this transfer portal era, the way you build a winning program is through elite high school recruiting.
Yeah. And I mean, the guy we were talking to, he wasn't in that class, but I mean, Hunter Ensley, it took him, you know, 2 or 3 years to come around. And then, I mean, he was phenomenal. Have you seen that doc that, that UT students did yet?
I watched it. That was, how awesome was that?
Dude, that was really cool. That was,
yeah.
And the release, the timing of it was perfect. Like, I think it was like the night before opening day. That they did a fantastic job. I thought that was awesome. So I'm glad you got to see it. Seeing Liam Dole, I know you didn't play with him. I know you didn't catch him, but just watching, observing, again, it was, I mean, he just mowed him down, right? It was 5 innings, 58 pitches, faced the minimum, 1 hit, no walks, 11 strikeouts. It was about as routine as you could go. But what were some of your observations of Liam Dole from watching that game?
Yeah, that game. And then last year when he threw against us in Knoxville, it's some guys light up the radar gun, but it might not feel as overpowering at times. It's just kind of tough to explain for whatever reason. You know, some guys have a certain energy up there or their tempo or whatever it might be. But Liam's one of those guys who just, you know, it's 96, 98, whatever it is, but it feels like he's throwing a bowling ball, not a baseball. It's just a heavy, you know, velocity type pitch, and it's on you quick. And, you know, before you blink, you're walking back to the dugout. So I remember, you know, from last season, that fastball just being electric and kind of looked like he's picking up right where he left off.
Boy, he's added velo. So if memory serves me right, I think he was sitting 92, 93, somewhere around there when he made that start in Knoxville. And, I mean, he's been up to 98. He's dropped 20 pounds. And, you know, that was a big talking point on Friday night and over the fall a little bit. I think he's dropped somewhere around 20 pounds, gotten in really good shape. And, you know, the velo has followed that. And he's we'll see it as we go through the season. But maybe he'll be able to work farther into games and all that. But I think his story is really a nice testament to Q and to this program and how – you know, your strength coach can really be in the nightmares of some of you guys. I'm sure he was in your nightmares too at points in times to get after it and make your bodies as good as they can be.
Yeah, and I mean, how cool that a guy like Doyle comes in and just completely buys in to what Q's got going on in there. It's not just him. It's all the guys they brought in this year. And that's, you know, as people are starting to figure out, that's a kind of a little bit of the secret sauce to this program.
No doubt. All right, Marcus Phillips the next day. I thought he was fine, worked into a little, got out of a little bit of adversity there. His defense, I think, made a couple errors behind him at points and times. But, you know, he was fine, had 4 strikeouts, 2 walks, didn't allow a run, gave up, I want to say, 2 hits, can't really remember. But from your experience playing with Marcus, you know, working with him, you know, why – I guess I was surprised whenever they were going to let him try to be a starter to begin the season. I know that was always kind of like a hope and a plan, but I know he finished the preseason off really hot. But, like, what does he have that makes, you know, Frank and V and everybody else just think, okay, this guy can click as a starter? Like what, in your experiences, what makes him so dominant in that respect that, like, hey, if he can find some command of his ball, of his pitches – yeah, he could be a really dangerous threat on weekends.
I think you see it just with your eyes. I mean, that's an intimidating presence on the mound, and the way he throws the ball, it's doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I think him and Burns are really the ones when you're back there catching, you never know when it might cut on you at the last second or something like that. So you got to be, you know, on your toes back there. But I really think I love the fact that he got that start this weekend, and I hope he continues to get more, because I'd love to see his confidence just grow and grow and grow with every outing and every start, especially. I enjoyed watching him work. I want to say that was the longest outing he's had in his career. You could fact check me on that, but I think the more opportunities he gets to do that, the more confidence he's going to build, and a confident Marcus Phillips up there is scary for the rest of the SEC.
What is you know, he had his moments last year. SEC tournament comes to mind. I know he had a, you know, big appearance against Kentucky. Did you see him kind of, you know, understand like, oh, I can do it at this level. Oh, I can be effective at this level. Did you ever see it kind of clicking a little bit last year, even though the opportunities might have been limited?
Yeah, I think I remember one scrimmage specifically where he was. I can't remember if I was calling the pitches or if Coach A was calling the pitches that day, but for whatever reason, he was kind of shaking off a decent amount. And Coach A, after the outing, was eventually just like, dude, your stuff is unbelievable. You know, I want you to throw what you want to throw and be confident in what, you know, you're throwing up there. But at a certain point, man, just get the sign and let it eat, you know. I mean, that's 100 miles an hour is 100 miles an hour. So I kind of saw that start clicking for him last year. And like I said, that guy has all the talent in the world. He's an unbelievable teammate. His teammates and coaches believe in him, and you can tell he's starting to believe in himself to the level that he needs to, you know, be elite in this league. And I think it's coming.
So Liam Dohl and Marcus Phillips going to get the starts again this weekend, Friday and Saturday. In typical Tennessee baseball, Tony Vitello fashion, we got a TBD slot for Sunday. We'll see if it's going to be Nate Snead again. And I think a number of different guys eventually can make starts there. Freshman Tegan Coons, who hasn't pitched yet, he was sick last weekend. I think Brandon Arvidsson, who got the midweek start on Tuesday, I think he's in contention there as well. Dylan Loy, when he comes back a little bit. But we'll see about this week. It might be Nate Snead again. I view Nate, and I mean, obviously, he was so instrumental for you guys, and you know, the run to Omaha and winning the whole thing last year. Versatility, piggyback role, stopper, you know, come in and close games, whatever you ask him. I know you're a catcher, but as a pitcher, I mean, how difficult is it to kind of have all these hats and not necessarily know, you know, what role you're going to have that day? Because I think that can be Nate Snead again. Again, he might start again on this Sunday coming up, but you know, 2 Sundays from now, he might be coming in and to piggyback whoever starts in front of him. It's just, you never know with Nate Snead.
Yeah, it's tough, and I've told a few people this. I think he grew up more than anybody on the team last year, and I say that in a good way. You know, there was some outings early on, maybe against Alabama, where who cares about the results, but just the way he handled it wasn't, you know, up to the standard that we have as just a teammate and stuff. And you know, there was actually an outing in the SEC tournament, maybe game one against Vanderbilt, didn't go his way. He bounced back, and it was either Mississippi State or maybe Vandy again later in the tournament. I can't remember, but you know, we had a huge outing for us, and that was, you know, that was kind of a time where we all rallied around him and had his back. And he was just a bulldog for us through that postseason run. And I really think he, kind of like you're saying, he took on that mentality of screw the results, screw how it gets done. I'm gonna go out there and just get outs. And that's it. I'm gonna eat innings, get outs, do whatever the team needs me to do to get this done. And once that switch was flipped, it was, you know, he was unstoppable. So I'm hoping he carries that over into this season, that mentality of just doing what needs to be done for the team.
Yeah. Again, he was instrumental, one of the best pieces that was added to that team last year before you guys won it all. Excited to see what he does this year. You know, just sitting here kind of thinking about it, and you know better than I do, but, you know, Snead was a flamethrower. Phillips, of course, is a flamethrower. I know Bean can get it up there every now and again, but I mean, he wasn't sitting 97, 98. Who else was, I mean, when Burns was here, I understand he was as well. Nobody else is getting close to triple digits, though, right? Last year or maybe a year before?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, once Ben Joyce had hit 105, it was kind of like you'd seen everything. But
Speaking of which, how does that feel to catch that?
I mean, talking about cold weather, catching 105 in cold weather, that's your palm's gonna be purple by the end of the night. That's what I can promise you.
I mean, those guys got to do it in the bigs like all the daggum time, man. I mean,
Yeah.
is there a sleeve you could wear? I mean, what can you do to prepare for that? Because, again, what can his catchers do to prepare for that on the reg?
Me and Evan Russell and a few others have tried everything, putting pads, gel pads under your glove or wearing a special glove to give some extra padding, but nothing really worked. You just kind of got to suck it up at the end of the day and try and catch it in the pocket, the sweet
Yeah,
spot.
in the
So,
web there. Yeah. Whew.
yeah.
Anyway, kind of leads me back over there. Like there were a couple of guys that could like throw the high velo, and I know that's not what it's all about, but this year, man, like Doles got it up there. Phillips, of course, you got Snead. There's a couple Tanner Franklin on Friday was getting up there. There's a couple other guys. Like they're like the velo is like there's a lot of guys can absolutely hum it this year. So I'm intrigued to kind of see how those guys kind of settle in and what roles they find. I want to go over to the offense real quick. Dalton Bargo is a guy that got the opening day start in left field. You know it. He can catch left field, third base, first base, DH, whatever. Just a ball player. 0 for 5, couple strikeouts, had an error in the field, didn't start games 2 and 3. Got the start Tuesday at first and homer twice in the same inning, had a grand slam, drove in 5. Kind of like, hey, remember it's early in the year, right? But like, hey, I'm still here. I love his mentality. It's always team first, but I mean, he truly is competing for at bats every single at bat because of the Levi Clarks and the Manny Marins and the Jay Abernathys behind him. How cool is it to see Dalton Bargo do what he did on Tuesday? And obviously, this is a guy that played the outfield in Omaha last year. He played third base for a stretch. He's a big piece of what you guys did last year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he wasn't happy with how it went over the weekend, and it's tough at the start of the season, especially when you look up there and you see the zeros. You just want to get on the board so that you've got something up there. But I promise you that his teammates, his coaches, I was certainly never worried about it. It's one weekend. That's baseball. It happens to the best players, and obviously he had the right mindset. I'm sure he took Monday to relax, turn his mind off a little bit, get back in the weight room, maybe take a few maintenance swings with Coach Elander. But no, there's never a worry with that guy. He's a hitter. He's a winner. He'll go out there and compete.
Jay Abernathy, probably the betting favorite to be the opening day left fielder as a true freshman. Didn't even get a start over the weekend, but got the start on playing all three games. Got the start on Tuesday. He was like 1 for 2 or whatever, sac fly, 4 walks, 5 runs scored, 4 stolen bases. It's like, okay, as soon as he got on, steal. Steal. Oh, bad throw, come in and score. As a catcher, going up against the Enrique Bradfield Juniors and some of those guys. I mean, how annoying is it? How stressful is it for your pitcher when you know that your guy's just over there? He's about to steal, and there's not much you guys can do about it because they're just so fast.
Yeah, it's a lot of times when somebody like that would get on, it's Coach A or Coach B would tell us that's the battle. The base runner is the battle, but the war is, pitcher versus hitter. And while I can understand that, it's frustrating for a catcher because you're like, man, I want to keep him from moving up 90 feet or maybe even 180 feet on certain, guys up there. But he's one of those guys where I know he didn't get a start this weekend, but he's too valuable to not be on the field. If not every game, he's going to be an integral part of every single weekend. I know that for sure. So that's a guy who I would just tell, stay patient, keep working, and your opportunities are going to come. And I know he'll be ready for him, and I know his teammates are rooting for him because he's a great teammate himself.
Yeah, I mean, baseball, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. The number three starter didn't get solidified until the last couple of weeks of the regular season with Xander, and then of course Xander took off. Like a couple of years ago, it was very much trying different guys in the outfield, and then finally you settled on Scott and Dickey and Inslee. It's all about figuring it out here in the preseason, before the conference slate starts. But still, as a player, as a competitor, how frustrating is it to like, all right, you got a start or two, and then you come back for the third game of the series. Oh, I'm not in the lineup today. That's weird. Like in the house, like Hunter talked about that in the documentary. It's like, huh, okay, I got to check myself. I got to be a great teammate now. Like, it's human nature to be upset, but also to buy into the bigger picture and try to, you know, establish that culture that you guys have already done here in this locker room for Tennessee to be about the team and support whoever's in there.
Yeah, and that's why Coach V and the rest of the staff is so good at what they do, is because that culture is already in place before, you know, the games start. But there's a different level of intensity during the season, a different level of intensity during SEC play, and then bump it up into the postseason. So, yeah, it's easy when you walk in there and see your name not in the lineup to get in your feelings. But it's important to, you know, maybe look at that, take a second, and then refocus on what you need to do to help the team win. But, yeah, it's tough, and that's why it's going to be fun to watch this internal competition, because there's more than nine guys that are worthy of getting that bats for this team.
Yeah, there definitely is. A couple more here, and then I'll let you go. It's been cold already. It's going to be freezing Friday and Saturday. How, just from a mental and physical, you know, standpoint, how do you get ready to play in the cold? I know sometimes it's just baseball, right, and you're used to it, but it feels like, you know, getting one in on the handles there in 35 degree weather, that doesn't feel good, does it?
No, it doesn't. Coach V, being, you know, the Missouri program was kind of his roots, and we went up there for that Mizzou series a few years ago. That's the coldest I've ever been playing baseball. He talked about how some of his old Mizzou teams saw the cold weather as an advantage. You know, we're practicing in this every day. We're working in it. So, you know, when somebody comes to our house, that's a way where, hey, if we handle the weather better, that's just another advantage that we have for the weekend. So I expect, you know, the team to take a similar approach this weekend. But for me personally, I feel like I'm pretty mentally tough. The cold is one thing that just got to me every time, especially sitting there in the dugout for 7 or 8 innings, and then maybe we, you know, pinch hit for Cal Stark and I'm coming in to catch Chase Burns off the bench or something. That's pretty tough. You got to keep the hand warmers nearby.
Yeah. Yeah, welcome back into it, kid. That's, you know, grab a bat. What's more difficult, playing in the cold weather or trying to track down a ball in right field in a midweek game?
Oh, man, you're doing me dirty there. that was after, you know, 4 years of catching scrimmages and games and stuff, too. So the hip flexor really wasn't firing on all cylinders. Maybe
Hey, don't shortchange yourself. I remember last year at Florida, you were taking grounders at second base during Fungo, right? So
Oh, yeah.
There's some versatility there.
There is. I think I'm going to say a freshman me gets there and catches that ball before all the wear and tear on the body.
Just seeing you out there playing right field, that was just awesome. That's what midweek baseball is all about. So, and then of course seeing you, gosh, man, what game was it? It was 23. You hit didn't you hit two homers against, was it Alabama A&M?
A&M, yeah.
Yep. And then one of those was a grand slam, wasn't it?
That was, I had another one against Austin Peay. The grand slam. Yeah.
Austin Peay, fittingly, because Austin Peay hit so many homers last year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff, man. Well, hey, what's out the door? What's one thing you're looking for, you know, this week with Tennessee baseball? What's a question you want to see answered? Who's a player you're going to be looking at? What's something you got on the sheet here that you're going to be looking for against Samford?
Yeah, I think, I want to see who in that bullpen is really going to arise as kind of a competitor when the fire gets a little hot. You know, I hope there's some high leverage situations this year where maybe we need to go to a lefty for a matchup, or, you know, hey, it's our starter didn't go the distance that we expected. We need somebody to come in and fill that middle four inning spot. You know, who do we go to? Who steps up? I think that's kind of what I'm looking for, because as we talked about on the offensive side, there's a lot of innings up for grabs there on the pitching staff too. And I'm excited to see how that plays out.
Good deal, man. Well, hey, congratulations getting this first one out of the way. You did great. And really look forward to talking with you again here in a couple of weeks after Yeah, we'll be talking after they get back from Houston. So hopefully we'll have a lot to talk about.
Awesome. That'll be a fun one.
Wasn't that good? Awesome stuff there from Charlie Taylor, former Tennessee catcher, clubhouse fan favorites, a clubhouse guy, and all-around great guy, as John Wilkerson would say. So I appreciate Charlie Taylor jumping on the show. Look forward to speaking with him again in 2 weeks from now, against Xander next week. And I know you guys enjoy hearing from those two guys. I've gotten a lot of great feedback about Xander. Looking forward to hearing the feedback we get on Charlie Taylor. All right, want to end this show by looking ahead at Samford. You know, last week I didn't spend a whole lot of time on Hofstra simply because I knew, as we all did, it was going to end in 3-run rule victories. I do envision at some point this weekend Tennessee to play 9 innings because I think Samford's a pretty good ball club. A preseason picked to a second to win the SoCon, D1 baseball, which, you know, I follow the rankings, and they do a great job of breaking down every team in America from all these conferences leading into the season. They actually picked them first in their projected order of finish to win the SoCon. But, you know, top 1-2 team in the conference. In fact, I believe it was UNC Greensboro that was picked to win the conference. If I can find one of my tabs here. I guess I exited out of it. Apologies. They won the conference, and Samford had like 2 points less. So, I mean, it was right there. And so many believe that they're good enough to win the conference. They got 3 first place votes, the most of anybody outside of the team that, you know, was picked to win the conference. And so far this season, a 3-1 record. Last week, they are coming off a midweek loss at Jacksonville State, 12-6. They lost there, but 3-1, really, really good team in the Southern Conference, and they're coming to Lindsey Nelson Stadium this weekend to, you know, see what the Tennessee Volunteers are all about. Coached by Tony David, and the strength of Samford this year probably going to be on the mound. And he was actually quoted in a D1 article that I read, the preview, saying this is the best pitching staff I've had since 2012. So that's something to keep in mind this weekend. Deep on the mound, they brought in a lot of transfers. Cameron Keshock from Auburn, who started last weekend. Josh Learson, from Birmingham Southern. He started last weekend. Joseph Lee from Ranger Community College. Bodie Vale from Shelton State. Drew Drunkenmiller. Yes, Drunkenmiller. That's how you say it, from Southern Miss. They also converted a position player and Kian Horowitz. It's probably not how you say that name, but anyway, he was a former position player that hits 93-97 in the fall, has a nice slider as well. So they've got a lot of depth on the mound. They are replacing 7 position players. 7 position players, 4 of which who transferred to Power 4 programs. And Tony Vitello actually kind of mentioned that on Tuesday night when we asked about Samford, and he said it's kind of a raw deal because, I mean, it is what it is, right? I mean, the Tennessees, the LSUs, the Florida's, the Wake Forest, I mean, the best of the best go, and they find players all over the country via the transfer portal. And so what you're building at programs like Samford, oftentimes you're losing these guys. And, you know, Michael Ross last year, who was considered their top pitcher, he transferred out. And, you know, Carson Lohr, who was considered their top bullpen arm, had 8 saves. The ERA wasn't great, but had 8 saves a season ago. He's gone. And Tony kind of made mention of that the other day. So saying that, hey, they evaluate, they recruit very, very well. They spot talent that's often overlooked. And these Power 4 programs have oftentimes benefited from that. But they will stand strong with their opening day starter, southpaw Miller Riggins, second team preseason All-SoCon. 90-94, has a slider, changeup, pitches off that fastball. Last year in 17 games, he started 3, 2-1 record, 4.50 ERA, 28 innings of work. So this year, giant step for him. Opening day starter last weekend, and Miller Riggins, second team preseason All-SoCon, a left-handed pitcher. Brooks Rice, right-handed pitcher, expected to be the ace a season ago. Tried to work through some early injuries before being shut down, kind of like A.J. Russell. A little bit different. A.J. Russell, of course, tried to pitch, you know, in the postseason. That's when he finally had to be shut down. But Rice is 93-96 with the fastball. Good breaking ball as well. They got Trey Higgins, transfer from Snead State. Going to hit somewhere in the middle of the order. I think he hit 6 last weekend. Left fielder, but can play center field as well. Capable of hitting 10 to 15 home runs. Cameron Keshock. came over from Auburn. He pitched against Tennessee last year in that series at Auburn. 90-95. Let's see here with this with fastball. 83-85 with his slider. Slider's the go-to pitch, swing and miss pitch. Changeup gives him three pitches. He started game two last weekend for Samford. Second baseman Jeffrey Entz, second team preseason All-SoCon. So get this. Last year spent his first season with Samford. He transferred in prior to that from Pearl River Community College after spending time at both Mississippi State and Louisiana Tech. So the guy started at Louisiana Tech, if I'm following this correctly, transferred to Mississippi State, went JUCO, Pearl River Community College, and then has been at Samford the past two seasons. So he's been all over the place. But anyway, he was preseason voted second team All-SoCon last year in limited time. 4.11 batting average, 12 doubles, 8 homers, 3 triples, 43 RBI. Hit leadoff this past weekend in 3 games. 4 hits, did drive in 1, scored 7 runs. That is Jeffrey Entz, the second baseman. A couple freshmen that we need to look out for this weekend. Jake Solders, mature player in stature. Hit 3 in the order to begin the season. And in all 3 of those games, he started a designated hitter or first base or right field. So started 3 games, hit in the 3-hole and played 3 different positions. DH, first base, right field. Another true freshman shortstop, Gus Gandy, shortstop, hit 2nd in the order. So those are a couple of freshmen that are in the lineup. And again, that weekend rotation last weekend, we'll see if it's the same. But of course, they are going to lead off with Miller Riggins. Friday night last week, he went 5 innings, 2 runs, 2 hits, 5 strikeouts, no walk, looked really good. Cameron Keshock from Auburn, 3 innings, 2 runs, 5 hits, 3 strikeouts, 1 walk. And then Sunday, they started another righty in Josh Learson. 3 innings, again, both those guys transfers. 3 innings, 1 run, it was not earned. 3 hits, 4 strikeouts, and 1 walk. So we'll see if they, in the preview that I'm going to put out tomorrow, we'll see if they have their projected, starters for the weekend, but I expect it probably to look very similar to that. San Francisco Ball Club, this will be a nice little test. Tennessee should win these games. I would assume Tennessee's going to sweep these games, but this is not Hofstra. This is certainly not UNC Asheville. There's depth on the mound a little bit. They got some pop in the order. So I like this test for Tennessee, certainly before you go to Houston. I expect Tennessee to hit a little bit of adversity this weekend, which will be good. Tennessee faced a little bit of adversity in the second inning on Tuesday night. Tennessee faced a smidge of adversity in the first inning on Sunday. They immediately answered back, right? Immediately answered back. And so I'm excited to see what Samford, the test that it presents Tennessee with this weekend. I'm excited to see how Tennessee responds to said adversity and these tests they're about to see. But anyway, you want to spend it, another week at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. We'll keep an eye on the radar. It's brutal, the temperatures, right, for Friday. We'll see if it's going to stay on schedule, if they want to elect for a doubleheader on Saturday. At the time of this recording, haven't heard, if they're going to do that. But, of course, we'll continue to ask those questions towards the end of the week, leading into the weekend. But another chance to get after it. We'll see what Tennessee does this weekend. 4-0 on the young season, and it has been an absolute blast. 4 games, Tennessee's outscored its opponents 75-6. And really, really looking forward. I don't know about you guys, but because of all this versatility, I mean, we can sit here and say, well, we think this guy, is best for the team in this position. And, Fisher at first base opens up third base for Marin or somebody else. We can play that game all day, but I enjoy getting over to the ballpark and going to find that lineup card and say, oh, well, this is what we got today. Ooh, look at that. Ooh, look at that. Like I did it Tuesday. Ooh, Fisher's at third the first time. Ooh, there's Jay Abernathy. Dalton Bargo's getting a start. That's fun for me. And because this team is so deep, it can certainly do that, and I imagine we're going to have 3 different starting lineups this weekend. So great stuff there from Charlie Taylor, Chuck. Appreciate you guys for tuning in and listening to us here on the porch. Tennessee baseball as scheduled right now, the time of this recording, 4:30 on Friday, 4 o'clock on Saturday, 1 o'clock on Sunday. We'll see if that changes. But all weekend long, coverage, whether you want it or you don't. On the General's Quarters, Game Threads, always a blast. Appreciate you guys for already being in there. We'll be back on Saturday for takes, what Tony Vitello said, some of the best stories from the weekends, how it happened, all that and more. And we'll be back on the porch next Thursday as well, presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem? Let them find a solution for you. T&Trial Lawyers specialize in criminal defense, family law, and personal injuries. Free consultation, 423-245-4185. Again, that is 423-245-4185. Or you can visit them online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. Spivey King and Spivey LLP, you got a problem? Let them find a solution for you. T&Trial Lawyers. Thanks so much for listening to us here on the porch, and we'll see you at the ballpark this weekend.